The show is called Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the show today, we have some theater and some jazz. The theater comes from the Rantoul Theater Group, which is in the midst of performances of the stage version of Ken Kesey's novel called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And that is going through this weekend. And we'll give you those dates as we have a conversation with three members of the cast who will also share a scene or two and a little bit of music that they're using in the show. And then the second portion of the program will be a conversation with jazz vibe piano and drum player Kevin Hart, based in Bloomington Normal. His group called Kevin Hart and the Vibe Tribe is performing towards the end of this month and the beginning of next, and also his piano trio later on in August. And we'll hear some from a recent CD of his. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was some music by the Percy Faith Orchestra, and I actually forgot the tune. What's track number 4 on the CD that we brought along? What is it called?
Yes, Theme from a Summer Place.
Theme from a Summer Place, and that's some of the music that's actually going to be incorporated into the Rantoul Theater Company's production of the play One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is, of course, based on Ken Kesey's novel. I don't know which is better known, the novel or the movie. But I know I've never read the book. I've seen the film, haven't seen the play.
I think the film is probably more popular since it's swept the Oscars and it's one of Jack Nicholson's signature performances.
That was quite a performance. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. We're talking with members of the RTG production, which is you've actually had a number of performances already. And the last ones are this weekend.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
That's correct, yes.
So let's go around the room and introduce yourselves. Two of you I know a little better than the other, and one of you was here when y'all did, what was the other Jack Nicholson show? A Few Good Men. Hey, was there a design to be doing stage versions of Jack Nicholson movies?
Thoughts exactly.
Yeah. But you played Nicholson's character in that one.
Right. Yeah. I'm not this one.
You're not in this one. Right. Yeah. Your name.
My name is John Daniels. I play Chief Bromden in the movie.
Okay.
Or in the play.
John Daniels. And are you from Rantoul?
I'm from Rantoul, yes.
Ex-Marine or present Marine?
Yes.
Both. are you ever not a Marine?
Once you get out, you're just a Marine.
You're just a Marine. Once you're in, what are you?
You're a Marine. You're a Marine with a temporary change of duty stations.
Okay. There you go.
David Heckman, I play Dr. Spivey in the show.
And you are from around here?
I'm originally from Urbana, yeah.
And living presently in?
Living presently in Champaign.
Shame on you, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Joe Porter,
playing Dale Harding, the so-called leader of the Patients' Council, one of the... the more educated members of the ward and supposed spokesperson for issues on the ward, but Dale is a pretty spineless man overall, and I'm from Champaign.
And?
Sam Schieber. I'm from Rantoul, and I play Charles Cheswick, who is kind of a mousy little fellow who pretty much scared of his own shadow, but doesn't want anyone to know that, and never really quite defined why he's in the institution, but neither did the novel or the movie either. In the novel, I drown in the pool about halfway through it, so I'm glad to say I get to live to the end in the stage version.
So you just gave away that there are apparently some changes made to the novel. It almost inevitably happens.
Yes.
In these adaptations. We don't have the show's director with us. Right, so who's designated to give a bit of an overview of of the play for those who may not actually have, may not even be familiar with the story or need a reminder like me.
Well, it Ken Kesey wrote this book in 1962, and it became a Broadway play in 63. Kirk Douglas bought the rights to it, and it ran for 2 years and won Tonys and was a huge hit on Broadway. The movie version came out in 75, which was 11 years later, and there were substantial changes to it. If you've seen the movie and love the movie, if you love the book, you already know there's probably the largest difference is the book is written from the chief's perspective in first person. In the movie, the chief is deaf and dumb, or pretending to be deaf and dumb, and never gives the monologues that define what is happening on the ward through his eyes. He's constantly under sedation and shock therapy, and in fact, Ken Kesey admitted he wrote the first of the chief's monologues while he was on peyote, and after, you know, he went through all these experimental drug tests with the government in California and had a lot to say about mental institutions, and the book was on the cusp of the counterculture of the 60s, and a lot of people really took to it. So in the play, even though the chief's thoughts in the book are written in first person, the play he gives these thoughts as isolated monologues and tries to describe to his dead father what's happening with the combine, as he calls it, the machinery that wants to put everybody in a little box and figure out that, you know, there's only so many types of personalities you can be to function in society. But he's a witness to all these injustices that go on in the ward and provides some really amazing insights to the audience on what they've just seen and what's to come.
So other major changes to the book that are made in the play?
Not as many characters in the play. The book probably has 30 or 40 named patients on the ward that are, some of them are very well developed. They disappeared in the movie and they were consolidated for the play. The major characters are all here. We have looked at Nurse Ratched repeatedly. In the book, she's a sadist. I mean, she rules this ward with the most icy, sadistic nature. And Kesey took tremendous criticism for this as being a misogynist and a racist, the way he wrote this book. In the play, she is given a very even keel. She never loses her temper, except once. But in the novel, she has a temper. She throws a lot of tantrums to reinforce her power on the ward. So that's one of the great differences.
Well, in the movie, I remember she was quite an icy character too.
Exactly.
But she's kind of youngish looking and pretty, and you'd think she seems very different than what you would expect from looking at her.
Right.
What was the name of the actor who played
Louise Fletcher?
Louise Fletcher. And how about the character, you know, the Nicholson character, Randall, what was his last name?
McMurphy.
And how is he a central focus in the book as much as he is in the film?
Well, everything that Chief sees changing on the ward is a result of McMurphy's entrance. He convinced a doctor at a prison work farm that he was crazy to get sent to the psych ward to get an easy ride. What he doesn't know is when you're committed to a psych ward, it's up to the hospital staff when you get out, whether it's a week or 100 years. That's a big part of this story. McMurphy's entrance to the ward was so perfectly described to us by Melanie, our director, as a grenade landing on the ward. We've never seen anything like this. He's boisterous. He's outlandish. He's extremely profane, which the listeners need to be aware of. This is not a play for children. And he comes in and takes charge and challenges her authority. You know, he sees the injustices that she continues to precipitate on these patients and the way she controls them. And he's challenging her, and he's also challenging them to stand up for themselves and be men.
Since you mentioned it, I know we've got a couple of scenes, and we might as well do one shortly. I should have asked ahead of time to make sure that this whatever we're going to read does not have any of that profanity in it.
Correct.
Yeah. Good.
Correct.
There are some issues about the FCC's future on this topic. However, we don't want to...
Love your show, Kevin. Hate to see you get booted off the air.
Exactly. So how about an introduction to what we're going to do? And are we going to be accompanied with any musical material for this or not?
We could play a little ward music. I think Moon River by Lawrence Welk is an excellent choice. It's another controlling thing that Nurse Ratched does on the ward. She plays the music loud to intimidate the patients. It's not that loud in the play because we have so many lions on the ward, but that's another issue in the book that McMurphy stands up for. So I think we should start with a couple of the chief's monologues, the opening monologue, and then then his second monologue after McMurphy arrives, and you'll see some of the things he perceives.
Okay.
You hear it, Papa? The black machine? They got it going 18 stories down below the ground. They're putting people in one end and out comes what they want. The way they do it, Papa, each night they tip the world on its side and everybody loose goes rattling to the bottom. Then they hook them by the heels and they hang them up and cut them open. Only by that time, they ain't got no innards, just some beat up gears and stuff, and all they bleed is rust. You think I'm raving, cause it sounds too awful to be true. But my God, there's such a lot of things that's true, even if they never really happen.
John Daniels, in the role of Mike's up now. John Daniels in the role of the chief from One Floor of the Cuckoo's Nest. What's been the audience reception to this thus far?
Fantastic.
It's been incredible. We've had some really great audiences this past weekend.
I mean, do you get the sense that they're affected by the mood? I mean, when the whole thing is over, do you get outlandish applause, or do you get a certain amount of silence? And then
the ending is very poignant. We don't want to give it away, obviously, because it's a lot of people. It was completely unexpected, and maybe they hadn't seen the movie or read the book in a long time. And I have told the cast and the director and anybody who'll listen, this is the best play I've ever been in.
Really?
We have a phenomenal cast. There's, as you know, in community theater, sometimes you have soft spots or little hiccups in the cast and people filled in and extras and townspeople and things. But this cast of 15 people has developed these characters to such extraordinary lengths that we've been reviewed in the Rantoul Press and the News Gazette, and they loved it. We have best reviews I ever read. The audience has adored this play, and we're very happy. Very happy with the reception.
It's been described as a roller coaster.
Emotional roller coaster, right. I assume. Yeah. Well, I do remember that part from the play, and the end is pretty shocking, which I do remember. I will not give it away, however. do we have a scene then with various folks in?
Well, our next scene will be a group counseling session between Dr. Spivey and Randall McMurphy. This is a big part of what happens on the ward, as patients are expected to enter in the logbook things they hear from other patients, and the nurse and the doctor review this. And this is the first time Dr. Spivey sees McMurphy, who's, I don't think I've mentioned, he's played by Rod Sickler, doing a remarkable job.
Oh, yes.
And Rod also produced this play extensively. So this is the scene early on in the play where they first meet.
Mm-hmm. So somebody is standing in for Rod at the moment.
Yeah, Sam Schieber.
Sam Schieber.
Well, it seems you've no previous history. Any time spent in other institutions?
Well, sir, including state and county coolers.
Mental institutions.
No, this is my first trip, but I am crazy, Doc. I swear it. Here, let me show you. That other doctor at the work farm? Yeah, here it is. Repeated outbreaks of passion that suggest the possible diagnosis of psychopath. Yeah. The way he explained it to me, that means I fight and, well, I you know. How did he put it? I'm overzealous in my sexual relations. Doc, is that real serious? I mean, have you ever been troubled by that?
No, Mr. McMurphy, I'll admit I haven't.
I mean, that fit a bit about fighting, I understand, but who ever heard of a man getting, too much play?
I'm interested in this statement, though. Don't overlook the possibility that this man might be feigning psychosis to escape the drudgery of the work farm. Well, Mr. McMurphy, what about that?
Do I look like a sane man?
Well, one of the first rules is that the patients remain seated.
Oh, why, sure, Doc.
You see, here we operate on the principle of the therapeutic community.
The which?
Therapeutic community. That means that this ward is society in miniature. And since society decides who is sane and who isn't, you must measure up. Our goal here is a completely democratic ward, governed by the patients, working to restore you to the outside. Now, the important thing here is to let nothing fester inside of you. Talk, discuss, confess. And if you hear another patient say something of significance, write it down in the logbook for all to see. Do you know what this procedure is called?
Squealing?
Group therapy. Help yourself and your friends probe the secrets of the subconscious. Bring those old guilts out into the open.
What guilts?
You have them or you wouldn't be here.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm beginning to catch on.
Excellent.
Like this dream I had the other night. Could you maybe tell me what it means? You see, it's like it's me in this dream, but then again, it wasn't me. I mean, it's more that someone looked like me, like my daddy.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's who it was. It was my daddy, for sure, because, you know, when I saw him, this big guy that looked like me had this big iron bolt through his jawbone, just like daddy used to have.
Your father had an iron bolt through his jawbone?
Oh, a regular Frankenstein.
Fascinating. I don't believe I've ever heard of a similar
Doctor, perhaps
dream.
We should move on.
That's the scene.
And Sam Schieber standing in for Rod Sickler as Randall P. Murphy. And where did it go here? You're the doctor, Dave. Dr.
Yes.
Spivey,
mm-hmm.
Dave Heckman, from Randall Theater Group's production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. There's three remaining performances, by the way, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll give the times as we come up towards the end. And maybe one more.
Outstanding. This is an interaction following this meeting between my character, Dale Harding, and McMurphy. And Harding is in of his own accord. He's hiding from his life is why he's on the ward. A lot of the voluntary patients are. His life and his wife, as it turns out. Very domineering wife. He's a very effete man. Uses his hands a lot when he talks and becomes in this particular counseling session we just heard, he's attacked by the other patients. They all just team up on him verbally to ridicule him, and they're just goaded by Nurse Ratched. That's a big part of her power.
And do we need any music for this one?
Oh, we could play a little.
This is on the ward, right? The conversation on
the ward. Little Henry Mancini or Percy Faith would be just right. This continuing music that we have playing under her power.
Yeah, so this is not something that was asked for in the script. It's it's one of the things the director of this particular
Correct.
Production suggested adding.
The play is actually usually staged in the early 60s. We bumped ours to 72 just for the music. The intermission music, the intro music, the closing music, to get some of the psychedelic rock, as it were, of the 60s that was so appropriate for this play. And the audiences have really, really responded to that because we have an older audience coming and you know, in the 60s, this is what they were listening to.
Okay.
Say, buddy, is this the way these little meetings usually go? Bunch of chickens at a pecking party?
Pecking party? I haven't the faintest notion what you're talking about.
Oh, okay, well, I'll just explain. The flock gets sight of a speck of blood on some chicken, and they go to pecking at it, see? Till there's nothing left but blood, bones, and feathers. But usually, a couple of the flock that gets spotted in the fracas, then it's their turn.
A pecking party. That certainly is a pleasant analogy, my friend.
That's right, my friend. And that's exactly what this meeting reminded me of.
And that makes me the chicken with the spot of blood, friend?
That's right, friend. And you know who pecks the first peck? It's that old nurse, that's who.
So it's as simple as that. As stupidly simple as that. You're on our ward 6 hours and have already simplified the work of Freud, Jung, and Maxwell Jones and summed it up in one analogy. It's a peckin' party.
Well, I'm not talking about Fred Jung and who's this Jones, buddy. I'm talking about that crummy meeting and what that nurse did to you.
Did to me?
In spades.
Why, this is incredible. You completely disregard the fact that everything she did was for my benefit.
Oh, horse apples.
I'm disappointed in you, my friend. I had judged you were more intelligent, but it's evident I made a mistake.
Oh, the hell with you, buddy.
Oh, yes. I also notice your primitive brutality. Psychopath with definite sadistic tendencies, probably motivated by unreasoning egomania. And those talents certainly qualify you as a therapist, my friend. Oh, yes, they render you quite capable of criticizing Miss Ratched, although she's a highly regarded psychiatric nurse with 20 years' experience in the field. But you, no doubt, with your talent, could work subconscious miracles, soothe the aching id, and heal the wounded superego. You could probably cure the whole ward in 6 months, ladies and gentlemen, or your money back. So that's the first real interaction, verbal exchange between Harding and McMurphy. And Harding acts, he's flair. I consider him flair for the play. He's color for the play to kind of provide narration, not in the way John does, not the way Chief does, but to describe what's been happening and what is happening from day to day.
He's really kind of a voice to the audience of what the patients are going through. Because, you know, I mean, most of the other patients, we sit there and twitch and we say things. But, I mean, Harding, I think, is really who is able to, you know, make the audience understand exactly what the patients on the ward are going through.
The real world rather than the world underneath.
Exactly.
And the chief is sort of narrating the underneath ward.
Right.
Right.
And then McMurphy's just throwing it all into chaos.
Exactly.
Well, I appreciate your coming over today, everybody. It's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for the Rantoul by the Rantoul Theater Group, and performances remaining are Friday and Saturday at 8:00, Sunday at 2:00 at the Grissom Hall Theater on Aaron's Boulevard. That's on the old Air Force Base, right?
It's in the same building as the Chanute Air Museum, which most people are familiar with.
In Rantoul, of course. And if somebody wants tickets, what's the procedure?
They can.
The website is www.rtgonline.org.
And you can find instructions there.
Yeah.
In other words,
all the details.
Well, I believe they're $10 at the door. I think you can get them $8 at any Rod Sickler salon if you
pre-selling briskly. Okay.
All right. Rod Sickler is in the role of Randall P. Murphy. He wasn't with us today. Our guests, Joe Porter, Dale Harding as Dale Harding, Sam Schieber, not in his role as Cheswick, but filling in as R.P. Murphy, and Dave Heckman as Dr. Spivey, and as Chief Bromden, John Daniels. Thank you all very much for joining us.
We appreciate it, Kevin.
Jazz with Kevin Hart coming up in a moment. Programs in WYLL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to enjoy the free Krannert Uncorked wine tasting in the lobby on Thursday, July 22nd at 5 p.m., featuring the Dixieland swing music of the New Orleans Jazz Machine. More information can be found at krannertcenter.com. And I should say that on tomorrow's show, we will have the New Orleans Jazz Machine playing for us live in our studio for the hour. It's live and local on FM 90.9. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Kevin Hart, who has a couple of groups currently, Kevin Hart and the Vibe Tribe. They're going to be at the Riverfront Stage in Peoria on the 29th, and also he has a piano trio, or I guess you could just call it the Kevin Hart Trio, piano-based group that's going to be playing at various places coming up. And Kevin is with us from, are you sitting in Bloomington or Normal right now?
I'm sitting in Normal right now.
Normally sitting.
Yes.
And, you know, Kevin is somebody whose name I've heard just about since I've been around the Champaign-Urbana community, which is since 1991. I don't know when you came to the U of I, but give us a little bit about your background and how you did end up in this area.
Well, that's about right, Kevin. I had just finished up my master's degree at University of Northern Iowa, and was looking for a further grad school. And at the time, Tom Berkner was at the University of Illinois and offered me an assistantship to help out, do some jazz bands and teach some jazz there. And so I took him up on it and moved to Champaign-Urbana. And I wound up staying there for a few years. So that's about right. Early 90s was when I arrived there.
And you did your undergrad at Eastern Illinois University.
Yeah, that's right. I did do my undergrad at Eastern, and my exposure to Champaign-Urbana was pretty minimal at the time, but I did actually make it up to Nature's Table and play a couple gigs there before it closed down, so I got a little taste of what that was all about.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Nature's Table. We did a show on that yesterday.
Oh, great.
Because they're having their fourth annual reunion on the 30th and 31st. Those are right in between your two gigs, so you could come over and see them if you want.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Number of good reunion groups coming together for that. You're sort of a multi-instrumentalist on vibes and drums and also piano, so the Vibe Tribe, I assume you're mostly playing vibes in that one?
That's right. That was one of the reasons I sort of picked a name like that for the group, because a lot of times I would say Kevin Hart Quartet or Quintet, and people would always ask, well, what instrument are you playing on that gig, you know? So I sort of came up with the name Vibe Tribe for a few different reasons, but also to just let people know that if you hear that group, you're going to hear some vibes.
And then the Kevin Hart Trio, you're playing piano.
Right. I do a little piano trio type stuff for some restaurants and that sort of thing, so...
I read in your bio that you kind of got your start on the vibes courtesy of an older sister.
That's right. I started out playing drums. We had a drum set in the house that my dad had bought just for fun. And so, yeah, you couldn't keep me off the drums. And then, of course, my mother made me take piano lessons starting in third grade, which I absolutely hated. But she made me stick with it. Through about eighth grade, I learned all the basics there, and when my older sister graduated from high school, she loved the vibes, and she wanted to buy herself a set of vibes. She was still living at home, and so she bought a set of vibes, and so here I was in the situation where there was a set of vibes around the house to play as a kid. Just kind of an unusual situation, so...
And you just started tinkering with them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a nice combination of, you know, the skills you use to play drums, you know, using your hands and stuff, and but also using all the notes of the piano. And it was kind of a nice cross between the piano and drums. And, of course, I would see, you know, Lionel Hampton on TV, and I would try to imitate, you know, what I saw him doing and what I heard him doing, and... that's kind of how I got started.
Remind me of some of who are, besides Lionel Hampton, who are some of the other well-known vibraphonists in the jazz world? And how common is that, really?
It's becoming a little more common. There's some good players out there now. But Lionel Hampton, of course, was the first vibraphonist I was aware of. But after that, I started... hearing about Milt Jackson, who was in the Modern Jazz Quartet, and I actually got a chance to see him a couple of times at a young age, and then another guy who plays a little more modern vibraphone, Bobby Hutcherson, who I really like to listen to a lot, and now there's some younger guys that sound great, like Stefan Harris, I really like, and Joe Locke, so... starting to hear about some more vibraphonists these days.
I saw that you have played through your work with the jazz bands that you're playing in at Eastern and at the U of I. You've played with some pretty well-known people, but I'm curious, among them Dizzy Gillespie, Clark Terry, Rufus Reed, but Louis Belson. Have you had the chance to have some of those vibraphonists you just mentioned hear you play and, you know, give you some pointers?
Boy, that's a good question. I've interacted with a few of these vibraphonists, mainly going to hear them play and, you know, catching them on break. I've met Stefan Harris a few times, wonderful guy to talk to. Bobby Hutcherson, really nice guy, really enjoyed talking to him. And then, of course, there's Gary Burton, who is He's one of those guys that people just love talking to him as well. And I've had a chance to meet him a few times, but I don't think I've had a chance to perform for any of these guys. So not yet, anyway.
How common is it for people to do master classes? Is there such a thing as master classes in the jazz world? I know there certainly is in the classical world.
Oh, yeah, there's master classes. That, you know, on jazz, it's usually involving improvisation. Or you might see a master class on a rhythm section, how a rhythm section would play together behind different lead players, different horn players, you know, or a vibe player, or whatever. But yeah, it's pretty common, a lot of jazz master classes.
I should look into that, see how many come to the University of Illinois here, as this jazz faculty has been built up so much in the last several years, because I would think it would be fascinating to see some people come in and do an improv class and see how they work with various students who might come in there. But so I'll just have to look out for that.
Yeah.
I know you sent me some recordings of groups, of your own groups. Why don't we take a little break from chatting and give a listen to some of your music? And do we have the trio or the Vibe Tribe or something else?
You're going to be listening to something that's very close to what the Vibe Tribe is. This is a CD I did back in about 2005, and I mainly to highlight some of my favorite musicians from around Central Illinois, one of them being Donnie Heitler, who lives right there in Champaign-Urbana. And he's playing piano on quite a few of these tracks, and he's been a pretty big influence not only to me but a lot of musicians who passed through the Champaign-Urbana area. He's like the Art Tatum of Central Illinois. He's just an amazing musician.
And so is it Donnie's Tempo we're going to hear?
Donnie's Tempo, yeah, is definitely one of the tunes you're going to be listening to here.
Well, why don't we give a listen to it right now?
Okay.
This is from which CD?
This is from a CD called The Road to Everywhere.
All right. And it's and how is it? So this is the Donnie. This is the Kevin Hart Latin jazz. No, The Road to Everywhere. That just says Kevin Hart.
Yeah, this is just most of these are like in maybe a jazz quintet. You're going to hear piano, vibes, bass, drums, and guitar on most of these tracks.
Okay, Donnie's Tempo. We're talking with Kevin Hart on Live and Local. Thank you. tune called Donnie's Tempo from Kevin Hart's CD from 2005 called The Road to Everywhere. Donnie, in this case, refers to Donnie Heitler, the wonderful jazz pianist who is heard weekly here in Urbana at the Great Impasta. In fact, you can hear him tonight at 6 o'clock. He's there every Wednesday at 6. And did you tell me that Mike Coker is the guy who wrote this tune?
That's right. Mike Coker, who taught at the University of Illinois for a while. He also went to school there back in, I believe, the late 80s or so. He was teaching some jazz piano around the time I was there. And he really kind of got me interested in pursuing jazz piano a little more seriously. I always played, but I really took it a lot more seriously just being around him, listening to him play, and also taking some lessons from him. But he wrote this tune for Donnie Heitler, and he wrote a big band chart, you know, featuring the tune itself. And so I often play this tune in a small group setting for a lot of reasons, because I know the composer, he's been an influence, and then also because I appreciate Donnie's talent, and then I like to play a tune that was written for him.
Sure. You said earlier that you actually hated the piano when you first learned. Is that because you think your mom made you do it?
I think it was because no, I don't think it was that. I mean, you know, you would find me. It wasn't that I didn't like playing the piano. I think it was it was very tedious. It's a tedious instrument for a young kid to learn. It just depends on the personality, I think. And, you know, to play piano, I mean, there's a lot of things you have to, you know, you really have to sit still. It's all about moving your fingers. And as a kid, you have a lot of energy. And I think I just gravitated more to the, you know, all the full body movement of playing percussion and vibes. And, you know, as I got older, I think I started to appreciate, you know, the beauty of the piano and actually being able to sit still and play it. So, and the other thing too is I always wanted to play jazz on the piano, and you know, most of the lessons were, you know, classical, learning the basics, and I really wanted to learn jazz, but there really wasn't anybody teaching jazz, so I was kind of picking things up by ear, and I wound up becoming more of an ear player rather than a person who can sight read really well. So
is it fair to say that you started to learn piano, but then you really mostly were doing drums and vibes and then came back to the piano and adding it to the mix?
Sort of came back to it, yeah. I mean, it was sort of always there. It was just kind of like third on the list, you know. Just, you know, I did it on the side, and I didn't take it that seriously. I didn't really sit down and practice that much, you know.
Well, I know that it's often important, and or at least helpful for somebody who wants to play mallet instruments to play the piano. But since yours is kind of a mix here, I wonder how much it goes the other way. Skills learned on the vibes, how much does that translate to the piano?
And there's certain things about playing the vibes that are more difficult than playing piano. You know, so in some ways, you know, a lot of times if people need somebody to play chords, to comp for them, you know, they'll say, well, you can play piano or vibes, you know, your choice. Sometimes people just call me for a gig and say, you can play piano or vibes, whatever you feel like playing for the gig, you know. And a lot of times if I know if I'm going to be doing a lot of comping and playing chords, I'll opt for playing the piano, because it's so much easier to just play full chords on the piano. And you know, but I know if I'm going to be doing a little more soloing and playing melodies and stuff, then I might lean more toward playing the vibes.
How much, it seems like the mallet instrument usually used in jazz is the vibes. Why are the xylophone and the marimba not so often used, or does anybody ever do those in jazz?
Yeah, Bobby Hutcherson, you know, you'll hear some marimba on some of his recordings. Marimba has a really nice, dark, warm sound. And the xylophone's not really used much in jazz because it's such a staccato-sounding instrument. The thing about the vibes that works so well is it has a lot of sustain to it if you want it. It has a sustain pedal on it like a piano, so you can play, you know, notes that last a long time, or you can dampen them with the pedal and have some short notes in there too. And it also has the feature of a little bit of a vibrato effect that's created by a motor and some baffles that go over the tubes. So it's kind of a more complex instrument. You know, you have to use your sustain pedal. You have control over some vibrato. So you have more options with the vibraphone, and it's a very nice-sounding instrument.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the technical, because I was just going to ask you about it for those who haven't seen a vibraphone up close, why it's actually called that. But you answered the question with those little baffles that sort of wave the air around above the tubes.
Yeah, I think that's probably the reason.
Let's listen to another track that you sent along. I should, before we do, though, I should remind listeners that I'm talking with Kevin Hart, who has a number of gigs coming up in the next month or so, but the most immediate ones are on the 29th of July at the Riverfront Stage in Peoria. It's a free program at 7 o'clock, Kevin Hart and the Vibe Tribe, and with special guest David Hoffman. Who is David Hoffman?
David Hoffman is a trumpet player from that side of the state, actually this summer I've been playing some gigs with Jeff Helgeson from Champaign, and Jeff Helgeson played with the Ray Charles Orchestra for a few years, and then when Jeff left the Ray Charles band, he was succeeded by David Hoffman. So I wind up playing quite often with Dave Hoffman because he's from the Peoria area. I've played in his groups and on his recordings, and I like to have him in the group from time to time as a special guest also. And he also plays piano, trumpet, and he's also composed a lot of his own music as well. So it's always fun to play with Dave Hoffman.
No, I bet. And since you mentioned Jeff Helgeson, he's going to be joining you on August 1st with the Vibe Tribe at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival.
Yes, that's right. Jeff will be coming over to Bloomington. I've been wanting to get him over to this, you know, Bloomington and Peoria area. He plays a lot in Champaign, and I really want some people around here to hear him play. He's such a wonderful musician, and really enjoy playing with him. So I really wanted to make a point to get him involved in some of these concerts that I have this summer. So.
Well, people can keep track of you and what your various gigs are. It's a nice website you have at kevinhartjazz.com. That's H-A-R-T. And you can just poke through there. A nice page you have on modern jazz.
Yeah, it's a little outdated at this point. But before, my wife and I, we have two kids now, but before we had the kids, we were going to jazz festivals and going up to, Chicago to hear all the major jazz players, you know, when they had a concert in the area. We just really went around and did a lot of that. So, and she also has a blog on some of the things that we've gone to see together as well. But I'd like to get back to that someday here, seeing some of the artists that are out there playing.
Sure. Well, there's always new ones coming through. Well, let's give a listen to another track from your CD. This was the earlier or the later of your two CDs?
This is the later of
the Road to Everywhere.
Yeah.
What should we try? I love the title, You're the Berries.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that.
Okay.
That's a tune by another Champaign musician who used to be an endodontist. His name is John Scott, and another great musician, influential musician, who was around Champaign in the 80s and 90s, and one of those guys who also wrote a lot of his own material and performed it. Had a great fortune of playing in his band for a while, so I became familiar with a lot of his tunes, and I still like to play quite a few of his tunes, you know, when I get a chance, and also. I mean, I like to play them, but I like people to hear, you know, music that was written by, you know, some local guys that, you know, really write some great stuff. And John Scott really wrote a lot of great tunes. And this is probably one of my favorite tunes of his called You're the Berries.
What do the berries refer to? Any idea?
I believe You're the Berries is a reference to maybe a Cole Porter tune or a phrase from a musical or something. I'm not really exactly sure, but there's some history behind that in that title.
So now listeners can go Google that and do their own
right,
research.
Right, I'm going to have to Google it myself. Yeah.
Now that we've raised the question.
Yeah.
All right, it's Kevin Hart and Company on You're the Berries by John Scott here on Live and Local. Was a tune by John Scott called You're the Berries with Kevin Hart and his colleagues. Do you recall who the other musicians were in this performance?
Well, the musicians on the CD are Don Heitler, played piano on quite a few of the tracks, and Mike Nellis from Peoria, who's also he's a bass player and guitar player. He played guitar in this album. Jeff Magby from Champaign played drums and some congas on this album. And Tim Brickner, bass player from the Peoria area, did all the bass work. And I think that covers it there.
And, of course, yourself on vibes.
I played vibes. I overdubbed some piano on a few tracks and played a little percussion, overdubbed some little percussion things on a few tunes, too, but mainly the vibes, yeah.
You said that John Scott was an endodontist, which is, for those who don't know the term, that's the kind of person who does root canals.
That's right.
Do you hear any influence of that profession in his trumpet playing?
Oh, boy.
Or do we not really want to know?
Hey, I don't know. I don't know, but he was a true endodontist. I remember one time telling him, we're sitting in a jazz club somewhere in Champaign-Urbana, and I was telling him I had some tooth pain, you know, and next thing I know, he's like, open up, you know, and we're sitting in the bar, he's got his finger, you know, like trying to see what's wrong, you know, and it was like, okay, we can do this at an office sometime, maybe.
not in the club.
Yeah, but he was, he was a fun guy, though.
Did he ever work on you?
He did some x-rays on me. He did some x-rays one time, but I think I wound up having a root canal done by a different dentist who had to put me under, I guess, to do it.
Nobody's favorite activity, although they're so much easier, I understand, than what they used to be.
Yeah, I think they are.
But we're getting off the point here, which is to mention again some of opportunities that people have to hear you and both your groups, Kevin Hart and the Vibe Tribe, on the 29th of this month at the Riverfront Stage in Peoria, and then with guest trumpeter David Hoffman, and then with guest trumpeter Jeff Helgeson on August 1st at the pre-show at the on the lawn at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival at Ewing Manor, and then the trio you're breaking out a couple of times later in August.
Yeah, there's a little restaurant here in Bloomington called Central Station Cafe, and they've been having some piano trios in there on Friday nights for dinner, and so I'm doing a couple of those.
And you're doing some teaching as well. Is this all current at Knox College, Parkland College, Illinois State?
Yeah, that's current.
How much do you travel back and forth between these places?
Well, I'm at Parkland a couple of days a week. I'm at Knox College one day a week, and then ISU anywhere from 3 to 4 days a week.
So maybe one of those days when you come to Parkland, we could try to work it out that you could bring some people over to play. I know.
Yeah,
it's,
that's what I'm thinking. You know,
it'd be
when,
fun
when
to do.
Things get rolling here with school and I'm over there, maybe we could work something out.
That'd be a real treat, because I've just rarely got to hear you when you were living here, and now that just doesn't happen when with you're in Bloomington and I'm in Urbana, and I don't travel as much as probably ought to hear some great music.
Well, there's a lot going on these days. It seems like I'm seeing a lot of jazz going on in Champaign, at least in my emails and stuff. So.
Oh, sure. Well, and I'm I'm learning about a lot more that's going on in Bloomington Normal, which is of course why we're doing the show.
Yeah, so. It's picking up over here. It's
yeah,
kind of nice.
Great. Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Kevin. Let's go out with one more tune from your disc called "The Road to Everywhere," which, by the way, you can purchase on CD Baby, as well as the older CD with Kevin, the Kevin Hart Latin Jazz Quintet called Corazon. I assume that's still available as well.
Yeah, that's still available.
And what should we do?
Maybe a good one to go out would be Expressway.
And that's a composition of your own.
That's a composition of mine. I was going to call it, it's kind of written in a style that I had heard Bobby Hutcherson play some of his compositions in, and I was going to call it Hutcherson Expressway, but I just decided to go with Expressway. It's kind of a fast, energetic tune. It's kind of the feeling you get when you're heading up to a big city like Chicago and there's cars all around you racing around and you're trying to hold your own, you know. But, Expressway.
So people have to imagine themselves in that situation as they hear this music.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And it's great to hear your music.
Thanks.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. listening to Kevin Hart on The Vibes and his tune called Expressway here on Live and Local. On our show tomorrow, we're going to have the New Orleans Jazz Machine playing live in our studio. They're giving the Krannert Uncorked performance tomorrow evening at 5 at the Krannert Center in Urbana in the lobby. Other performances tonight and tomorrow, the Young Park Singers are at the Children's Museum in Decatur tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. And the Jenks Voice Studio is presenting a program called Disney and Mozart at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign tonight at 7 o'clock. The Chip McNeil Jazz Quintet plays at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7. The musical Annie is at the Little Theater in Sullivan tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock and through the weekend. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival is presenting The Merry Wives of Windsor tonight in Bloomington at 7:30. It's the musical Honk, put on by the Actors Rural Theater Company in Tuscola at the Community Building there tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock and through the weekend. The University of Illinois Summer Band performs on the Quad on the U of I campus tomorrow night at 7. Shakespeare's Macbeth is being put on by the Lunette Players at Stratford Park Bible Chapel in Champaign tomorrow at 7. And I think that covers that. Support for our show today comes in part from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. With wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer, wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLFM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. Thank you.